Welcome to TFL's Capital Connection, your insider source for both the policy work and the ministry that goes on at the Iowa Capitol. I'm Drew Zahn, Director of Communications here at the Family Leader, and I have with me Chuck Hurley, who is our longtime lobbyist and family advocate at the Capitol. Just the two of us today, because we have big news, policy news to talk about. A battle that's been going on for, it goes back about 34, 35 years.
That's right.
And our work on it, Chuck, you know, you said that it really picked up about 13 years ago. But no matter how you do the math, it's been a long victory in the coming. And I say victory because we have great news to share with you. Yes, Chuck.
Woohoo.
There you go. Yes. He's raising his hands. Chuck, that doesn't do any good on a podcast, man.
Goes right along with my radio face.
There you go. All right. So, Chuck, we are talking about, of course, one of the Family Leader's top legislative priorities, not just this year, but for many years going back, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go in and dive in deep on this. It was passed this past week by the Iowa House. Am I correct?
That's correct.
And it was passed previously by the Iowa Senate in this session. Yeah. So it is on to the governor for her signature. But what is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act? Why is it needed? Why is it such a victory? Why are we so happy today? Sure. Why is Chuck, you know, raising the roof over here? You can't see it, but he's doing it. Well, you know, so we're going to get into that today. That's the topic. So I like to take things chronologically.
Sure.
Let's go back in time, okay? And I'm going to start. I'm going to go way back to this thing called the Bill of Rights. And the number one amendment in the Bill of Rights is freedom of speech and assembly and, among other things, religion.
In fact, if you read the First Amendment, religion is actually referenced before speech or press.
Indeed.
Or right of assembly.
Hence, it's called the first right
the
sometimes.
That's right, our first liberty. And, you know, just to be thorough here, we really need to go back to Europe, England particularly, where religious liberty was crushed. People were literally burned at the stake for their religious views. And one of the main reasons that people immigrated to the United States was for religious liberty. So this really is a founding principle why our country even exists. So it really is and that came out during the debate. It's fascinating that there's some scholars in the chamber that recognize that, and our floor manager, Representative Steve Holt, did a phenomenal job on that. And, you know, there's a lot of phony fear-mongering from the left that has kept the RFRA bill from passing in Iowa until this year. And Representative Holt did a good job of dispelling that too. So kudos to the floor manager, Representative Steve Holt. Kudos to Alliance Defending Freedom, who has been a tremendous ally in this. I remember, I'm going to say 6 or 8 years ago when Alliance Defending Freedom flew some people in, and Kelly Fedoric was an attorney with them, and she and I and Senator Guth and Representative Salmon went to see Tom Miller, our then Attorney General, to talk about RFRA. And it happened that Tom Miller, liberal Democrat, but a fairly reasonable guy to dialogue with, was a huge fan of Teddy Kennedy's. And Teddy Kennedy had promoted the federal RFRA in 1992, 1993. So Tom Miller actually was good with RFRA, but he was the only Democrat that in Iowa that would actually speak on behalf of RFRA. And he wasn't even in the legislature. He was attorney general. So we just have not been able to get this ball into the end zone.
All right. Well, let me check you right there. I'm going to go back into the history lesson just a little bit more. Okay.
Yep.
So you talk about the First Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, guaranteeing our first liberty, religious liberty, which stood from the very beginning. The Constitution was ratified at 1789, I think. Mm-hmm. So this liberty, this first fundamental liberty, stood as a core part of our country for literally a couple of hundred years until 1990, I believe.
Yes.
U.S. Supreme Court took a big old bite out of the First Amendment.
So forgive me, I don't have my history book right open in front of me, but I think the Constitution was ratified maybe in 1787, and then the First Amendment was the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, were ratified, I think, in 1791. So, yeah.
So email us, folks. Let us know when that was. You look it up.
Okay. 199 years of rock solid understanding that religious liberty was at the top. It was a pinnacle, fundamental constitutional right for every American. And then, sadly, in 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a case called Employment Division versus Smith that religious liberty, not really that big a deal. I mean, it was a shocking ruling, so shocking, in fact, that the United States Congress passed a federal RFRA, Restoring Religious Freedom, almost immediately after that. Well, then why do we need it in Iowa? Because—
Now, hold on, Chuck. Yeah, I want to get there, but we cannot stress this enough, that back in 1990, and I think it was about 1992 by the time the ink dried on the bill, but the federal government at that time under the presidency of Bill Clinton, and you mentioned Ted Kennedy, big power in the Democratic power in the U.S. Senate.
Chuck Schumer, I think, was in the House. He's now in the Senate.
Sure. But these guys recognized that what the Supreme Court did in 1990 created all kinds of problems, eroded, I said earlier, took a chunk out of the First Amendment, and it was at the federal level, Republicans and Democrats, but led by Democratic names that are among the biggest we know, who said, we have got to restore religious liberty, and at the federal level, passed a bill very similar to what was passed here in Iowa. Pass this at the federal level. This used to be a bipartisan, everybody gets it, except for the Supreme Court, apparently. Everybody gets it that you can't do what they did.
Right.
And it gets passed at the federal level, but—
Nearly unanimously.
Exactly.
I think it was unanimous in the House and maybe two or three no votes in the Senate. It was near unanimous. Bipartisan. Everybody got it, just like you said.
America was united. We need religious liberty, and we need a RFRA.
Yeah.
That happened at the federal level, but, you know, the courts and laws, sometimes it doesn't always work out the way you want, and states had a problem. Chuck, what happened?
So in 1997, the U.S. Supreme Court said, the federal RFRA doesn't apply to the states. So then each state had to begin passing their own RFRAs. Well, now fast forward, I think 25 states have passed it statutorily, and another 8 or 9 have passed it at their state Supreme Court level. So you're into the mid-30s now of states that have restored religious freedom. Iowa, sadly, was one who hadn't until now. We have the bill that's passed the House and the Senate, and it's going to Governor Reynolds. And she's already said she's going to sign it. So we are a
presumptive close here on our part, but she said she will.
She said she will. Yeah.
She tends to be a woman of her word.
Yeah.
But why? Why is this Restoration Act needed federally or at the Iowa level? What was wrong? What was the consequences of not having it?
Sure. The fact is that if you don't have strict scrutiny, that's the legal term of art, for a fundamental constitutional right, you're going to lose most of the time. And so if you have strict scrutiny over a fundamental right, let's just take free speech, okay? Let's say that the state of Iowa said, well, this podcast is critical of some of our legislators. And I am critical of some legislators who have stood in the way of RFRA now for, in my experience, 13 years. And they still, as of late last week, were railing from the floor of the House that RFRA is going to do all this damage. So if I were to criticize somebody on this podcast, then the state of Iowa would say, well, you know, it's okay to shut down TFL's podcast because, you know, we just don't like the way you're criticizing the legislators. Well, we all would take great umbrage at that because free speech is a very high right, First Amendment. Well, religious liberty should have as great of deference as free speech does. And case after case after case since 1990, religious liberty has lost. And so
let's put a handle on this for just a second. Yeah. Here's the concept, as with the hypothetical that you've created. We've got a group here who's created a podcast. They're exercising what should be fundamental right.
Yes.
And then the government steps in with a punitive action, whether it's shutting it down or fining it or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. The government comes in and punishes somebody for exercising what should be their fundamental right.
Yes.
Well, what do you do then? Well, the natural thing is, well, you go to court.
Yes.
And you say, hey, this was wrong. Government shouldn't have done this to me. And when you go to court, a judge has a number of different standards with which he looks at a right.
That's right.
And the best of those standards, where the right is held in highest esteem, is what you called earlier the
strict
scrutiny. Right. Yeah. Strict scrutiny. And when a right is protected by that strict scrutiny standard, it's a high standard.
Yes.
The government better have a pretty darn good case for why they tried to clamp down on somebody's right,
yeah.
Or the government doesn't have a good case anymore. And there are some times, you know, yelling fire in a crowded building is the classic example mm-hmm. of when, even with strict scrutiny, the government does have enough cause to say, no, you can't use your freedom of speech that way.
Because it's so dangerous, people die in the stampede. Slander is another one. You literally don't have a First Amendment free speech right to lie about somebody to their detriment. They might lose a job. They might lose their reputation. And so, yeah, there are limits to free speech. There are limits to religious freedom. Mm-hmm. But those limits have to be very narrowly tailored for a compelling government interest. An example in regard to religion is very few people even blink anymore when they hear that there's a conscientious objector to going to war. There's a great movie that came out about Desmond Doss. He was a very devout Christian who believed in nonviolence, was going to be court-martialed, but the courts said that no, your religious liberty to be a pacifist is so hallowed under the First Amendment that we're not going to allow the government to court-martial you for refusing military service. Well, war is a compelling interest, but with the strict scrutiny standard, Desmond Doss and hundreds of other conscientious objectors have been able to avoid going to prison because of their conscience forbidding them to shoot and kill combatants.
You make a key point there, because when we are talking about religious liberty, you just brought up the example of Mr. Is it Dawes or Dawson?
Desmond Dawes.
Dawes.
I think it's D-A-W-S.
Yeah, and you made the point, and you clarified the case, didn't even mention what religion that Mr. Dawes was, because in essence, that's irrelevant.
Yes.
The Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and indeed the First Amendment, protects people of all religion, no religion, when you have at a religious core level a deep conviction that something is wrong that you can't participate in, for example.
Yes.
You can be a conscientious objector. And that was controversial. Those were the things that went to court. And eventually it was that strict scrutiny standard, that high standard that protected Mr. Dawes and has protected many people since. But back in 1990, when the Supreme Court essentially took that standard away, Iowans were vulnerable.
That's correct.
Iowans could stand on their conscience, could stand on their religious liberty only to lose in court because the state courts weren't held to that standard. They didn't have to respect it.
That's correct. And, of course, war is a federal issue. You know, the United States drafts people to go into combat. In the state setting, there may be a myriad of state laws. One of them in Iowa is the Civil Rights Code. We had some dear friends in Grimes, Iowa, just outside of Des Moines, who ran a wedding business. And when a couple of homosexual men came in to supposedly rent their wedding facility for a homosexual wedding, this Mennonite couple said, I'm sorry, our religion doesn't allow us to participate in that, provide the catering, the facility, the flowers, all that stuff. And they very kindly turned down this business because of their religious conscience rights. Well, that homosexual couple then was able to use state law to fine the Old Guards in Grimes and eventually put the Old Guards out of business. And so that's just wrong when you take the club of the Civil Rights Code and you crush someone's conscience rights. And so RFRA is designed to give the Old Guards at least an argument, a day in court where they can argue their conscience.
An excellent point that you make there. A couple of points I just want to highlight. One, we saw a specific example in Iowa of the force of government punishing someone, you mentioned a fine, mm-hmm. punishing someone for exercising religious liberty. And because RFRA wasn't there to protect their rights, that family in particular was left without significant recourse in the courts.
Well, and the Civil Rights Commission said that they had to buckle under. They had to go along with the next couple and the next couple if others were to approach him, which others would. I mean, they were a target, okay? And so they had to shut down their business. Otherwise, the Civil Rights Commission could have continued to fine them and even at some point jail them. And so you're looking back at old European punishment for your conscience, for your religious values. That's just un-American at its very core.
Absolutely. But I also want to point out, now this is an important distinction, something that you said in there, because let's say RFRA was in place back then with the Odegaard family. It doesn't necessarily mean that they would have won or would have lost that case. Religious Liberty Restoration Act, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA, as we call it, simply puts in place the standard where it has always been, where it's always belonged, and said, okay, now court, you must take into consideration the significance of this right before you decide who wins or loses this case.
That's right.
You can't just, and that's key, because it's not as though RFRA decides who wins and loses these cases. It doesn't. It doesn't pick the winners and doesn't pick the losers.
Yeah.
What it does is say, all Iowans, regardless of what their religion is, all Iowans deserve to have their religious liberty respected and have its day in court, as you said, Chuck, before the government can come in, honestly, unjustly punish them for exercising what should be a fundamental right.
Yep.
And so RFRA is now passed. Governor Reynolds has promised to sign it. And honestly, it is like the First Amendment. In the Bill of Rights just got passed in Iowa again.
Right.
We have our religious liberty back. You know, John Adams who am I thinking of? Madison. Instead of rolling over in their graves, they're clapping in their graves. Iowans have our religious liberty back, and that is why we are celebrating RFRA. Chuck, before I sign off here, anything more you want to say about this victory and what it means?
I remember testifying 13 years ago in the Iowa House of Representatives in favor of restoring religious freedom. And then we have testified, I've probably personally testified 20 times or so since then, House and Senate. And it was just a joy this year to see the process finally move through the full Senate and the full House. And it's like, oh, we've finally recognized that this is the right thing to do. And we have put aside the phony arguments, the horror stories that have not happened in these other 30-some states. And so it is just so refreshing to see truth win out over lies. And it's just, you know, it's one of the crowning moments of my professional career. career at the Capitol.
Well, Chuck, I want to say thank you to you, not just for joining us today, but I want to say thank you for your consistent and persistent work on this very issue. I know one of your favorite sayings, biblical saying, is the diligent who shall rule. I think that's a proverb, if I remember correctly.
Proverbs 12:24 says the diligent shall rule. And Galatians 6:9 is what I sign off my emails with. It says, do not grow weary in doing good, because in due season you shall reap if you do not give up. So a lot of this is a matter of persistence.
Well, Chuck, thank you for your diligence. Thank you for the work that you've done with the Family Leader, been persistent in this. Let's celebrate this and take that into the Capitol, that spirit of celebration as we take on the next fight and the next.
Let me just say, to God be all the glory. He's the one who gives us His Holy Spirit. And I would not have persisted if it hadn't been for the power of God working in our lives at the Capitol. So to Him be all the glory.
To Him be all the glory. And thank you to our listeners and supporters for making this kind of diligent and persistent fight possible. But as you say, Chuck, to God be the glory. Thank you. And thank you for listening to this week's edition of TFL's Capitol Connection.
This podcast is a project of the Family Leader and the Family Leader Foundation, and is only possible through the generous support of our donors. If you would like to partner with us in our work, please visit thefamilyleader.com/give.